from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We heard a lot about erosion this past week, whether it be erosion on an emergency spillway at Oroville Dam or the erosion of trust between the president and his national security advisor. Now let me add another troubling story, beach erosion. A new study of 29 beaches along the California, Oregon, and Washington coast by the U.S. Geological Survey has found unprecedented erosion caused in large part by the powerful waves from the 2015-2016 El Niño. That weather system may not have brought the rain we were hoping for at that time, but it did bring among the largest ever recorded waves, causing winter beach erosion to be 76% above normal. We discuss these findings and what can be done to protect California's coastal areas with Patrick Barnard. He's coastal geologist with the U.S. Geological Survey, Pacific Coastal and Marine Science Center, and he's lead author of Extreme Oceanographic Forcing and Coastal Response Due to the 2015-2016 El Niño. Good morning to you, Patrick Barnard.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. And also thank you to Leslie Ewing. She's Senior Coastal Engineer at the San Francisco Office of the California Coastal Commission. Good morning to you.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Pleasure to have you. Patrick Barnard, if I could start with you. Locally, when, you know, we think erosion here, Pacifica, Half Moon Bay come to mind. Were those among the beaches that experienced some significant erosion?
They did. In fact, you know, Pacifica declared a state of emergency that winter due to severe cliff erosion. I believe they had to relocate another one of those apartment buildings that have been withstood chronic erosion for many years, but it becomes very acute during these very powerful El Niño winters.
Is this a level of erosion that we won't be able to recover from, say, from natural systems? There's been a suggestion that that's the case.
Well, we lost enormous amount of sand that winter, and we've only recovered so far about 60%. And so, you know, in a typical winter, you lose sand to the bars, and the bars eventually migrate back on shore, and there's relatively little net change. But in this case, we lost about 40% of that and before this next winter arrived. And so now we have fairly depleted beaches, which are more vulnerable to the storms that are hitting us right now.
And how does the El Niño 2015-2016 compare, say, to the 97-98 El Niño?
Right. Very comparable. And you know, we looked back in the historical record, and for example, the sea surface temperatures during this last El Niño were the highest ever recorded in the 66-year history of that record. There's proxy data, which takes that record back to 1871, and it ranks in the top three with the 1982-83 El Niño and the 97-98. So effectively, those three are the monsters of the historical record.
Now, with the rain that we are getting this winter, could that, you know, replenish the beaches, bring sediment from those rivers?
It can, and this is sort of the silver lining of this winter. Even though sort of inland we're experiencing lots of hazards and mudslides and flooding, it is making the rivers flow, and those rivers bring sand to the coast, and that sand gets redistributed and helps re-nourish our beaches.
Are you concerned, though, that even that won't be enough?
We have quite a deficit going on, and just in general, with accelerating sea level rise, we need more and more sand to maintain the beaches at their present level. So it's probably going to be a multi-year process of recovery, but moving forward, there's going to be continued stress on the system with perhaps more frequent and extreme El Niños, and in fact, there is one now, which is a lot of the models are suggesting is going to come next winter. Likely not as extreme as this last one, but perhaps another El Niño all of a sudden.
Wow.
And just long-term sea level rise is going to put these continued stresses on our coastal system.
Well, Leslie Ewing with the California Coastal Commission, first, what was your reaction to this report, and how are you planning to use the information?
So I thought this report was a wonderful compilation of what happened last winter during the El Niño. Patrick has a great team of researchers working with him, and it was an amazing sort of picture of what's been happening up and down the Pacific coast. We're going to be using this to try to look at what will be the temporary changes that we're seeing now between last winter, this winter, and the storms and the damage that's happening along the coast, and then look into the future of what we can expect to be our future normal conditions. And as Patrick said, it's unlikely that these winter storms today that are bringing in more sediment to the coast we'll really be able to replenish all of the sand that we're going to need now and into the future. So we have to start looking at how these changes will how we'll need to respond to them in more of a permanent fashion. And you asked about Pacifica and recovery there. When we lose coastal bluffs, those won't be able to recover. That sand is not going to get back up onto the top of the bluffs and rebuild those. So we're talking about both beaches and cliffs that have seen dramatic change over the past couple of years.
And Leslie Ewing, Senior Coastal Engineer with the San Francisco Office of the California Coastal Commission. We're also talking with Patrick Barnard, Coastal Geologist for the U.S. Geological Survey. And we're talking with you, our listeners. Give us a call with your questions or thoughts. That number is 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can email us at forum@kqed.org. Post your comments on Facebook, Twitter, or on our website, kqed.org/forum. And Leslie Ewing, could you talk a little bit about the kind of environmental and the economic impacts that this could have, you know, in Pacifica and elsewhere?
Well, when we lose coastal bluff, we're losing coastal property where, as you see in Pacifica, there have been, I believe it's now 3 apartment buildings have been taken down and a number of homes have been removed. From the 97-98 El Nino, Pacifica had 9 out of 11 homes along Esplanade that were removed. They were red tagged and then taken out. So you lose that economic base. As we lose our beaches, we lose a lot of our tourism and recreational value along the coast. There are a lot of communities that have beach in their name. I don't think any of those want to start changing their name to just Manhattan or Redondo. We want to see those beaches there. They're huge recreational resources. They're also habitat. Lots of creatures live in there. We've got fish that come up onto the beaches and spawn. We have birds that only use the beaches for their nesting areas. And so between the economic, the environmental, and the habitat values, our beaches are incredibly important to us.
Yes. Patrick Barnard, do you want to add anything to the environmental and economic impacts?
Yeah. I think as we've kind of stated, it's going to be a challenge moving forward as we're going to need, you know, we rely on these nice wide beaches in California. They provide a sound economic base for many communities. And moving forward, we're going to need a lot more of the sand resources than we currently have available and are contributing to the system to help sustain these beaches. In fact, we've done many things to further restrict that flow of sediment. We've built many dams over the last century. We do lots of dredging and removal of sand from the system. We perform sand mining in many areas. And all of these are limits to a natural system that will already be stressed by the pressures of the coming century.
And does, you know, spending millions of dollars to bring sand back to artificially replenish beaches solve the problem?
Well, it's a temporary fix, and especially for these communities that rely so much on these beaches for their economy. It often has a strong cost-benefit ratio, and I would certainly defer to Leslie for some of those ramifications. But in many cases, it's always a temporary fix, but it may be a worthwhile one if the communities rely on that for their survival.
Leslie, do you want to add to that?
Certainly. I mean, we did see that many of the nourished beaches in Southern California did better than those areas that hadn't received nourishment. So we know sand does provide a storm protective value. But whenever you place sand on a beach area, you're covering over whatever is there now. You're changing those conditions. And one of the things people observe after there's been a nourishment project, the sand is placed up on the dry beach. Things look nice and wide and wonderful. And then that sand is resorted and remixed because our beaches don't stop at the water's edge. They go offshore 20 and 30, 35 feet offshore into deeper water, into water depths of 20 to 30 feet. And so as that sand is remixed, people think, oh my gosh, it was just here for 1 year. It's gone away now. And so we need to be able to have people understand the dynamics of the beach and that this nourishment that looks so great in years one, maybe years one and two, is part of a resupply of that huge deficit that extends both onshore and offshore.
Well, let's hear what our listeners would like to know. Ben in Berkeley, good morning.
Good morning. I'm actually with San Francisco Baykeeper, and we have brought a suit challenging sand mining in the bay, which I think Mr. Barnard and other scientists believe had a rather strong influence on beach replenishment, especially at Ocean Beach, which has the highest level of erosion in California. And here we're taking, you know, millions of tons of sand right out of the bay, and then we're watching our beach communities and our beaches erode along the coast. And to the extent there's a connection there, I think we really need to address what humans are doing to impact this. And I would love the your speakers, your panelists, to talk a little bit about that and about what kinds of things we can do to slow down the erosion.
Thanks, Ben. Patrick Barner?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we did quite a bit of research over the last decade to try and understand the whole San Francisco Bay system. And I think, you know, what we've realized, and this is the case in many different natural systems, is that these are not isolated nooks and crannies of the bay that are not connected to other parts of the bay. The whole bay is connected, the delta is connected to the bay, and the bay is connected to the ocean. And so the flow of sand from the Sierras through the bay to the open coast is a critical sort of lifeline for these beaches. And, you know, Ben is correct, the area south of the Golden Gate is one of the most rapidly eroding stretches of coast in the state of California. And one of the reasons for that is we've modified our system so dramatically through damming, through flood control, through dredging, through mining of sand directly out of the bay, that we've effectively cut that resource off or significantly reduced it. And so there's a lot of efforts going on throughout the bay now to that recognize that sand is a valuable resource and mud is a valuable resource for the wetlands, for the open coast in terms of the sand. And as Leslie mentioned, too, this sediment is the first line of defense for these communities against storm and flood protection. And so it's really essential moving forward that we, throughout the state, identify and realize that sand is an extremely valuable resource, and we have to use it effectively and efficiently in order to provide the protection that many of these communities are going to need increasingly as we move through the following decades.
And what are some specific solutions that could be implemented?
Well, one thing we worked with folks in San Francisco Bay on is to identify the precise flow of sand through the system. So identify which pathways, let's say how the sort of the so-called river of sand flows. And mm-hmm. So to make sure that we aren't intercepting sand along those pathways, perhaps we're taking it out of so-called dead ends that would not be otherwise going to the coast. So that way we can sort of selectively manage the resource and make sure that the most critical sort of flow of sand isn't interrupted and allow that sediment to make it out to the open coast and to help nourish these beaches.
Well, let's hear now from Will in San Jose. Hi, Will.
Hi. My comment is we can do things to help the environment on the impacts that are man-made created, but why do we not allow nature to take its course on our coastline when in the first place what created that beauty was nature itself? So why would we prevent it from creating more or changing the landscape? I know we want to protect coastal communities, but if people went there by choice, so why would we want to interrupt and the way that it needs to be for future generations and not keep it at a standstill?
You mean, will to sort of naturally revive itself over time? You mean?
Not revive itself, but for the areas that we caused the problem, great, we're fixing it. But for the areas that are naturally happening, such as beach erosion, it's what made California coastline the way it is and how beautiful it is. Why would we prevent such things from happening, as the previous caller had said about having those beaches stay in place?
Lessa Ewing, do you want to respond to that?
I can try to. It's certainly an issue that folks at the Coastal Commission grapple with almost daily, trying to sort out that balance.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, the California coast has been so altered by human activity, both in terms of the sand supplies that are available coming down the coast that Patrick talked about, with damming of our rivers and changing our stream channels to be concrete lined, and then also putting in ports and harbors that alter sediment patterns as they go up and down the coast. There's a point at which we can't really turn back that clock and say we're going to just have all of this development go away. We have to work with some of the systems, human and natural, that we have now and find a new balance that will let the natural systems occur and work on the coast as they are trying to do. We're not going to stop what nature's going to do to the coast, but we also can't, I can't imagine seeing all of our development along the coast move out of the way of nature right now so that everything will continue to erode and retreat back. Some of that may have to happen over time, and there's certainly areas where development is at such a precarious point that things will be relocated. But we have to work with the balance of what we have on the developed part of the coast and what the natural conditions are.
Well, let me hear now from Erica in Oakland. Hi, Erica.
Hi. I just had a question to follow up on one of your earlier callers or comments. Dr. Bernard, you spoke about the research that's been done to identify specific ways that impacts on Ocean Beach and other beaches can be reduced, like mining sand, I think you said, in dead ends that wouldn't affect erosion as much. Have our agencies responded by requiring reduced dredging or sand mining? And if not, what are ways that, you know, they can actually take action? And this might be a question for Leslie as well.
Patrick, pardon?
Yeah, this is Patrick. I can't get too much into the policy end of things. I can say that the San Francisco Bay Conservation Development Commission and California State Lands, who are intimately involved in the permitting for aggregate mining, have been very active in evaluating the research and have implored the industry to sort of follow the directions that research is pointing them toward in terms of reducing mining in some areas and maybe increasing it in others. So I think there is a very concerted and very active effort for all these agencies to use science to direct policy, which is really one of the wonderful things about living in California, where these state agencies actually look to science to direct their management and policy decisions.
Patrick Barnard, are you familiar with the Water Infrastructure Improvements for the Nation Act that was passed in the closing weeks of the Obama administration?
Yes.
Could you describe that and what it does?
Well, I think, sort of the goal is to identify major infrastructure projects that can more effectively manage our water resources. And I think that, moving forward, it's a bit ambiguous about how that's going to be implemented. But perhaps I should defer to Leslie, who may know more about how that may come into practice at the state level.
Leslie Ewing?
I'm sorry. I just heard about this yesterday, and I can't say anything about it.
Yeah, the only thing that I've read about it is that it's basically starting pilot projects where sediment is dredged up and could be used to restore and protect coastlines. And my understanding was that San Francisco would like to be one of the regions that may participate potentially in this pilot project, which also reminds me, Patrick Barnard, we talked about Pacifica and Half Moon Bay. We had a caller earlier bring up Ocean Beach. Are there other local examples that we might not be aware of that are experiencing some significant erosion here?
Yeah, well, Ocean Beach is one of the most exposed beaches really along the entire Pacific coast. And in this last winter of 2015-16, typical winter it experiences about 90 feet of coastal erosion. And this last winter it experienced about double that, about 180 feet or so. And, of course, at the southern end of Ocean Beach is Oceanside Water Pollution Control Plant. It's a $1.2 billion piece of infrastructure with associated very large pipes underneath the Great Highway, for example, and that stretch of coast has been chronically eroding for some decades, and that erosion kind of comes to a head during these kinds of very significant winter events with continued undercutting of the road, potential compromising of the pipes, and it's a very large sort of infrastructure problem, which is not unique to Ocean Beach. I think one of the callers mentioned before about, can we retreat? And in some cases, that's being considered. And that Pacifica is a great example of where that's actually been implemented. But the problem is that we have about 25 million people living in coastal counties across this region. And many of the critical pieces of infrastructure, like water treatment plants, like sewage plants, sit right at sea level. And that's one of the sort of these critical areas that we have to protect just to support these communities.
Again, Patrick Barnard is coastal geologist with the U.S. Geological Survey, Pacific Coastal and Marine Science Center. Leslie Ewing is senior coastal engineer with the San Francisco Office of the California Coastal Commission. Bob writes, "It's ridiculous to me that we allow people to build right on the coastline. How many times do buildings need to be torn down before we get the message?" And let's hear next from Roxanne in San Francisco. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi. I wanted to hear from the speakers about what is being done specifically under Measure AA that was recently passed in the Bay Area.
Leslie Ewing, does Measure AA help this?
Well, Measure AA is going to be helping a lot with wetland restoration within the Bay. And our wetlands are one of our major starting points for defense. The wetlands work almost the way beaches do on the outer coast, where they dampen the wave energy, they absorb a lot of the water, and they provide habitat. They provide protection for the backshore infrastructure and are a marvelous way of protecting the backshore areas through natural systems. So Measure AA is going to be a great boom for San Francisco in helping to work on the wetlands that are there. Like Patrick said, though, those are going to need sediment as well. They're going to need some of the fines, materials, and some sand so they can build those areas up and have them be most effective in absorbing wave energy.
Thanks for the question, Roxanne. We're talking about a USGS survey that has found unprecedented beach erosion. A study of 29 beaches along the California, Oregon, and Washington coasts found erosion from 2015 to 2016, the winter storms then to be well above normal, and there are concerns that beaches might not be able to recover. You can call 866-733-6786 to join the conversation. Email us at forum@kqed.org or post comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, or on Facebook and Twitter. Let me see if I can get some more calls in here. Jennifer in San Francisco. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. I'm actually with the Surfrider Foundation, and so we work on this issue quite a bit. And thinking about coastal erosion and the loss of public access is really a key issue that comes up, because clearly the less beach that we have, the less beach people can go to. And, you know, I understand like the need and the desire to protect private property and to protect infrastructure, but there's also a great need to maintain the public trust and the right of Californians to have a beach to access. And so I was wondering if there could be a little bit more discussion about the benefits of managed retreat versus the drawbacks of ocean open-ended sand replenishment.
Managed retreat?
Yeah.
Great. Leslie Ewing, do you want to start?
Certainly. Well, managed retreat is a concept that's been identified for a number of years, the thought being that when structures, infrastructure, roads are being threatened by erosion, at risk from erosion, then they would be relocated. They would be moved back. There are a couple of communities in Northern California that actually have written into their covenants and codes that would happen, that they would not armor their portion of the shoreline, that they would move things back out of the way. And it is a certainly being tried and used in different locations along the coast. Caltrans has been one of our strong advocates for relocating sections of roadway so that they are inland enough that they're not being threatened by erosion and natural processes can occur. And it is a huge benefit and something that we will probably be seeing more in the future, because with rising sea level, the small efforts we're making, able to make, to try to protect areas from erosion and flooding will have to be ramped up significantly, and the costs for doing that are going to be enormous. So the cost to relocate structures will become far more viable in the future as we recognize fully the risks that they will be facing.
And Patrick Barnard, do you want to add anything to that? Because Brian also writes, I'd love for the panelists to talk about the advantages of a managed retreat approach, which is a more long-term approach.
Absolutely. Well, I think, you know, the science is really converging on the fact that we are going to have many feet of sea level rise over the coming century and the centuries beyond. In fact, you know, sort of on, we're tracking right now globally to be far above the, even the highest projections that IPCC has put out, you know. And if you look in the recent geologic past, when we were only 2 degrees Celsius warmer, sea level was 8 meters higher, or about 26 feet. So what that means is we're basically halfway there in terms of temperature increase. We're almost about a degree above the pre-industrial. We are almost undoubtedly going to get to 2 degrees. And what that means is we have already baked into the system, even if we stopped emitting today, on the order of 26 or 27-ish feet of sea level rise over the coming centuries. And so as the science becomes more and more certain, it's pragmatic to, in many cases, to simply get out of the way, because this is, we're just putting lots of small Band-Aids on things. But if you look at the big picture, this problem is not going to go away anytime soon, and it'll be at great cost savings if we take sort of more drastic measures now than when it's potentially too late.
Well, let me see if I can squeeze in one last call from Teddy in San Francisco. Hi, Teddy.
Hi, Teddy. Thank you, Teddy. My question was regarding the impact on marine and mammal life. There's been a lot of conversation about the economic impact, and I was wondering if there is or any established correlation between the previous erosions from the monsoons, as well as what's the speculation going forward.
Leslie Ewing, do you want to address that?
Well, if I understand the caller's question, it's how are marine resources, marine animals, being affected by the loss of beach?
Yeah.
I don't know that there have been studies looking specifically at the consequences from the 2015-16 El Nino or even these storms this year, but we have a lot of marine mammals that use our beaches throughout the year for haul-out areas, and as there's less beach for them to use, there's certainly overcrowding, and it will certainly be a concern as our beaches go away and there's the loss of that beach nutrient getting out to the near shore.
Well, Leslie Ewing with the California Coastal Commission, thanks for talking with us. And thanks to
you.
Thanks to you, Patrick Barnard, as well, coastal geologist with the U.S. Geological Survey.
Thank you so much, Nina.
Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Judy Campbell, Tina Lauberg, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our interns are Devin Holt and Stephanie Roberts. I'm Mina Kim. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of the Minetti Schremm Museum of Art at UC Davis, who believe that all people deserve access to education and culture to enrich a lifetime of exploration and learning.